Next is in the matter of Mendel Zilberberg. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Yes, good afternoon, Chief Justice. Those of justice of the court, I'm Warren Argy, the Connecticut counsel on behalf of the Office of Attorney General.
And I'm Kim Wrangler from the Wrangler Law Firm on behalf of the respondent, Mendel Zilberberg, who is here with me today.
And Mr. Zilberberg, you will have the opportunity, if you'd like, to address the court. You need not do so. It's your choice, and you can speak with Ms. Wrangler before we reach that point privately.
Thank you, Chief Justice. He does intend to make a political statement to the court.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Moriarty, please go ahead.
Good afternoon again, and thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. This matter is before the court following the Disciplinary Review Board's granting of the Office of Attorney Ethics motion for final discipline in accordance with Rule 1:20-13C2 following respondents' federal convictions for bank-related fraud. As part of that, the Disciplinary Review Board has recommended that he be disbarred in accordance with the court's precedent in In re Goldberg. The OEE agrees. Respondents' convictions stem from 2008, in which he was a board member of a bank then known as Park Avenue Bank. That bank was in dire financial situation. It was on the risk of being shuttered. It was on the risk of being shuttered. This was information well known to respondent because he was a member of that board. At that time, there was an individual by the name of Abraham Kanaan who was seeking to get a loan, but he was unable to do so because of his credit. So he brought it upon himself to find a straw man buyer or loaner, lendee, to go to the bank, request a loan for $700,000 to be paid to him with no intention of that money ever going to him. That loan, through the loan approval process, ballooned to $1.4 million. Now on its own, that loan likely not to be approved. However, they had the benefit of respondent as a member of the board and as the listed attorney for the straw man borrower to be able to facilitate that loan being approved. And but for respondent's involvement, that loan never would have been approved. The record is full of instances in which respondent is pushing this loan along, communicating with the loan officer, answering and calming every concern he had that would stop this loan from being approved. At any time, he could have stopped. He could have said, I shouldn't do this, because he knew that those loan proceeds were not going to the straw man. He knew that those loan proceeds, in part, over $500,000, were going to go directly to him with no intention ever of repaying it back to the bank. Ultimately, this was discovered. It was investigated. An indictment was brought. And respondent was convicted and sentenced to 30 months in federal prison. The court's analysis of cases like this is admittedly not a per se disbarment case where we might see in other instances of knowing misappropriation and the like. However, the court has articulated and followed the Goldberg factors. And when we look at the Goldberg factors in this situation, we see that all of them are met. This was persistent, calculated, prolonged, resulted in personal gain directly to a respondent, and required his status as an attorney, as well as his status as a board member of the bank. When you look at those factors, disbarment is the only appropriate outcome. Now, respondent, although has not touched on these Goldberg factors in any of the submissions to the court, does say to the court that he should not be disbarred and brings forth many mitigating factors. Those mitigating factors were addressed by the Disciplinary Review Board, have been addressed by the Office of Attorney Ethics on numerous occasions, but I want to highlight a couple here today. The first is that he has stated many times to the court and to the Disciplinary Review Board that he stands by his conviction, which he must under Rule 1:20-13C2. However, he then goes and says all the different ways in which his conviction shouldn't have occurred. But at the end of the day, the proofs beyond a reasonable doubt found that he was guilty of these five federal crimes for which he was sentenced to 30 months in prison. He has put forth that he notified the Office of Attorney Ethics of his conviction. His obligation was to do so at the time of charging. I believe that to be a wash. And finally, the mitigation of the strength of his conviction on that of a cooperating informant or co-conspirator. As many of us in this room have practiced criminal law on both sides, that is part and parcel with the business. And at the end of the day, it is up to a jury or a judge in a bench trial to make a determination whether or not that conviction was proven beyond a reasonable doubt, which it was here. No appeal was sought, and that conviction stands. In sum, respondent lied to the bank about what his role in the transaction was, lied about who the funds were going to go to, and lied so that he could benefit personally as a result of this. When you look at the Goldberg factors, when you look at the mitigating factors here, which do not overcome that Goldberg analysis, the only appropriate outcome is his disbarment. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the court may have. Thank you,
Mr. Moret. Ms. Ringler?
May it please the court, Chief Justice Rabner, Associate Justices, the respondent is here today to take advantage of this opportunity to present argument on the appropriate sanction and to urge you to conclude that precedents not only allow you but support a determination that a less draconian sanction is the appropriate final result in this matter. A term of suspension would meet the goals of the disciplinary system and take into account that the respondent stands before you convicted of federal offenses that have been similar to offenses other respondents have been convicted of and not been disbarred, although certainly there are cases across the spectrum. We are urging that you take into account the fact that this was a single transaction. It was one loan, not a complex ongoing matter as in matter of Conroy, and not 25 different transactions as in Serrano. And in both of those cases, suspensions were imposed, sometimes retroactively. And we are asking that you you consider imposing a term of suspension, whether it's a fixed period of time or an indeterminate period of time for suspension, retroactively to either 2019, when Mr. Zilberberg was indicted, or 2023, when he was convicted and self-reported to the Office of Attorney Ethics, or at the latest 2024, when he became administratively ineligible based upon not filing his attorney registration. There are numerous facts we feel are appropriately highlighted. The trial court and the judge who presided over the trial, as well as the sentencing, himself stated that Mr. Zilberberg's actions were not done as a lawyer, did not relate to his law practice. The Office of Attorney Ethics has decided to promote its own interpretation of what happened at trial and urge that he was acting as a lawyer. We do not shrink, respondent does not shrink from the reality that as a board member, he had a fiduciary duty. And Mr. Zilberberg has candidly, forthrightly, and consistently acknowledged that he engaged in conduct that led to his criminal conviction. And he in no way today or before the disciplinary review board or in any submission has challenged the fact that he is guilty of federal offenses stemming from the one loan, which was 2009. The statute of limitations would have expired in 2019, and shortly before he would have been in a safe harbor for whatever happened in 2019, he was indicted a full decade after the events took place. The trial was in 2023 when he was then convicted. So we are now 16 years from the date of the occurrences. In its papers, the suggestion was raised that Mr. Zilberberg hid behind his constitutional rights and indeed invoked his constitutional right under the Fifth Amendment. Mr. Zilberberg, the record shows, never pleaded the Fifth, but he certainly did put the government to its proofs, and the government rose to the occasion and proved its case beyond a reasonable doubt. No person who's a criminal defendant should be criticized for undergoing the process of a determination of guilt or innocence by a jury, as he was. There are numerous mitigating factors, since we do not disagree about the fact that Mr. Zilberberg is guilty of the federal offenses of which he was convicted, we respectfully ask that you give considerable weight to the rather extraordinary mitigation that is present. I mentioned that the loan took place in 2009. The passage of time itself, according to your precedents, is a mitigating factor. In fact, to impose discipline today in 2025 for acts that took place 16 years ago could be viewed by the public with a raised eyebrow. No one's questioning your authority to do so and the fact that the acts were wrong. But it didn't happen last week. He wasn't even charged until 10 years had passed. The Office of Attorney Ethics has suggested that Mr. Zilberberg was and the other participants were hiding the facts. There isn't anything in the record to show that there was any such plot. It's bad enough what occurred, but there was no after the fact obstruction of justice that was ever charged or suggested. The loan details came to light when one of the participants who had a prior federal conviction for fraud was once again finding himself in difficulties with the law and proffered information about what had happened in 2009. And that occurred in 2019. So the passage of time is by itself a mitigating factor. During that time, Mr. Zilberberg has engaged in productive and socially beneficial conduct, which is another mitigating factor. No person is defined by one act, typically, and we are not minimizing the conduct that you are considering here as the basis for discipline, but in the context of a life, particularly a longer life, Mr. Zilberberg is 67 years old. The offense has a different cast. There are 55 letters from people who are attesting to his fine character and how he has specifically helped other people. Not every person, not every practicing lawyer has the time or the inclination to offer a homeless person a refuge, to help and mentor that person so that now, as he says in his letter, he's a captain in the U.S. JAG. Not every lawyer has the time when he hears about people needing organ donations to start an organization that goes on to find matches and organs for 100 people plus. Not every person, when there's a natural disaster, springs into action and helps a community deal with the events that have transpired. In my experience, this court is scrupulous about reading and taking into account the submissions, so I won't summarize any further those 55 letters that were written on his behalf, but they do represent a rather extraordinary amount of charitable actions, socially beneficial actions, and socially productive conduct, both in the years from 1994, when he was first admitted to practice law in New Jersey, through the date of his conviction, to the present. So it's not only that there is nothing else, it's also what occurred during that period of time is admirable and commendable. Mr. Zilberberg was unaware he needed to report allegations against him, and he's accepted full responsibility for that. In 2019, he did cease practicing law at that time completely. And when he was convicted, he very promptly let the Office of Attorney Ethics know he was now, had been found guilty and was convicted. Other factors to take into account are that there is very little likelihood, if any, of a recurrence of professional misconduct. Mr. Zilberberg has experienced significant consequences for his actions. they are a deterrent. His family, his freedom, his finances have all been significantly impacted as a result of the conviction and the charges and the activity back in 2009. Also, weighing in favor of a less lenient, less harsh than disbarment resolution is his age. The punishment has already been meted out, and at 67, he's unlikely to repeat his misconduct. We ask that you take those factors into account and look at the precedents. Certainly this court is very conversant with the range of options that are available to you. For a person who is 67, the difference between a term of suspension, which requires a reinstatement petition to seek return to law practice, on the one hand, and the new opportunity under the post-Wade Commission rule to apply for reinstatement after a disbarment is enormous. And it's enormous because of the distinction between filing a reinstatement petition for after a term of suspension and having to take and pass the bar examination in addition to other conditions. Mr. Bill Zilberberg hopes and respectfully asks that you allow him the hope and the opportunity to someday return to practice, that the feasibility of that opportunity does turn on being suspended for a period of time as distinct from disbarment.
Ms. Ringler, he hasn't practiced since 2019, you mentioned. With his admissions to three bars, what was the nature of his practice in New Jersey before then?
My understanding is it was quite minimal. May I confer with my client to give you a better answer? I apologize. Mr. Zilberberg did not have any type of litigation practice where he appeared in any tribunals, but he did advise clients in transactional matters and other matters. The numerous substantial mitigating factors that are present here allow the court to weigh the wrongfulness of a federal felony conviction against a lifetime of good works and a rather unusual circumstances of sitting to determine a sanction 16 years after the underlying misconduct took place, which was 2009. We ask that you do take those into account. And in our brief, we have highlighted some of the cases in which similar misconduct, misconduct involving fraud, misconduct involving straw borrowers, a case such as Serrano, where the respondent utilized his children to be straw borrowers of loans. And nonetheless, there are many cases in which the court has determined that the appropriate sanction is a term of suspension rather than disbarment.
Before you reach the final request, I hope you can comment on one aspect that's in the DRB decision. Your client, of course, accepts the conviction, but there's a question about the level of his acceptance of responsibility. And I'm looking at page 40 where the DRB says that in his submission to us, respondent continued to deflect any responsibility for his actions, instead attempting to blame Sauber and his co-conspirators for participating in concocting the illegal scheme. He also chastises both Sauber and Cain for cooperating with the government and testifying against him at his criminal trial. I wonder if you could comment on that and also address the question that begs as to whether he fully accepts responsibility for what took place here, please.
With the highest degree of respect for the Disciplinary Review Board, we disagree with the characterization of Mr. Zilberberg's attitude or assignment of responsibility. He accepts full responsibility for his role in the loan transaction. It is also factually accurate to say that the case relied on two other individuals. And indeed, as we note in our brief, there were two additional individuals who were involved who became unavailable because of the passage of time. One passed away and one was suffering from Alzheimer's and could not be available as a witness. So the trial judge's judgment was that Mr. Zilberberg did not have a leadership role, that he did not use his standing or status as a lawyer in the loan, and that the other people who are participating were fully, if not more, engaged in the obtaining of the loan. Those facts are not submitted or highlighted in an effort to diminish or negate Mr. Zilberberg's role. As a person who reveres the law and honors the law, he went to trial. He had eminent counsel from New York represent him, and the jury spoke. He presented his argument that the amount of money that was remitted to him, not directly from the bank, represented a legal fee, and that argument or that position was articulated and presented. The jury rejected it, and as he should, particularly as an officer of the court and as someone who trained to be a lawyer, he's accepted that. He did not appeal the verdict. He didn't raise other arguments to undercut it. He accepted the verdict as he should have.
The passage that I read,
yes,
relates not to what happened at trial, but during the DRB proceedings. Did the DRB get it wrong in its description?
If the DRB concluded that Mr. Zilberberg was denying his involvement in the transaction or saying those other guys did it and I didn't, then yes, I would say the Disciplinary Review Board misinterpreted our position. And that responsibility falls on my shoulders for not conveying Mr. Zilberberg's actual position, which is he accepts full responsibility for his criminal conduct. This is not a case, however, where a disinterested witness saw an individual show up with a gas can, light a premises, drench it in gasoline, and light a match and saw it go up. And the person promptly calls the fire department and the police. These are individuals, and as Mr. Moriarty said, many of us here have had experience as prosecutors or in criminal defense work. You take your witnesses where you find them, and if it's a criminal enterprise, you probably are going to have people who have colored or checkered pasts who are your witnesses. But here the fact is, this occurred in 2009. In 2019, one of the participants, for his own benefit, proffered information about the 2009 loan, which was 10 years old. While these proceedings have no statute of limitations, and in no way is the respondent in the least criticizing the Office of Attorney Ethics for any tardiness, that's not the case at all. The conviction was in 2023, and it has proceeded with this final discipline motion.
And the OAE became aware of the charges in 2023.
Correct.
For the first time.
Yes.
So four years after the indictment.
Yes. And but coincident with the verdict of guilty. So that is not anything we're hanging our head on in any way. It's, yes.
I was going to say, to follow up to the Chief Justice's question with regard to the DRB's concerns with regard to acceptance of responsibility, didn't the trial judge in sentencing your client also note that he had seen no remorse or acceptance of responsibility for his actions?
He did not get a 2-point reduction for acceptance of responsibility. And I may be splitting hairs, so forgive me, Justice Pierre-Louis, but he does accept that he is guilty and that he participated in this loan. It's possible in our world, in any world, that people are convicted of things that they may not accept, that they played a criminal role in. But that is all water under the bridge. From the moment he self-reported, from the moment there was a legal finding that he was guilty, he has embraced that. And candidly, with the advice of counsel supporting and affirming that position, we have never taken the position, Mr. Zilberberg has never taken the position, that he doesn't deserve to be here or warrant a professional sanction because of that conviction. But this court exercises its very broad powers with compassion and with recognition of many aspects of a respondent's life. That's why we have the list of mitigating factors and what the role was. Again, he was a fiduciary of the bank. He was a member of the board, but he was not, according to the trial and sentencing judge, operating as a lawyer. It didn't involve any lawyering skills.
Can I ask, does he still possess a Florida license?
He has informed Florida of the conviction. My last understanding was that there's action pending. I don't know whether he has a license in good standing at that time. He has Florida counsel who's trying to do the right thing there. He has no expectation of practicing law anywhere in the near future, but again, and to reiterate, the opportunity to apply for reinstatement in a period of years following a term of suspension, as many, many other respondents have received terms of suspension for equally serious, equally dishonest crimes. Our expectation, our hope, is to persuade you that those precedents apply here. Not that to minimize the wrongdoing, but rather to say, look, there's a lawyer who put completely false statements in 25 different RESPA statements or closing statements or loan applications, knowing they were false, and counseled his clients to do it. And that guy got a term of suspension. That individual did. So rather than going through each of them, because I know your time is incredibly valuable, I would ask you to be cognizant of the range of sanctions that are available and to consider that the fairest sanction consistent with protection of the public is to impose a period of suspension on Mendel Zilberberg for the 2009 loan transaction resulting in his 2023 conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Ringler.
Would the court like to hear from?
I'd like to address the court.
You can go to the podium or you can stand.
We'd ask you to come to the podium. If you need to sit, you can bring a chair over as well.
Well, fortunately for my back, it won't be that long of a statement. May it please the court, Justice Rabner, Associate Justices, thank you for this opportunity to address you and for your consideration of all the arguments and mitigating circumstances that my attorney has presented today and in our brief. I stand before you humbled, convicted of federal offenses, but sincere in telling you that the events surrounding the loan in 2009 that was the subject of the criminal charges are not representative of who I am as a man, as a person, as a lawyer. Throughout my life, I have endeavored to comport myself ethically, to respect the law, to help my fellow man or woman in any way I can. The criminal charges stemming from the loan transaction 16 years ago, the trial and conviction by a jury, have all had a tremendous impact not only on me, but also on my family. There is zero chance of any future infraction on my part should you allow me the potential to resume law practice in the future. When I finish my sentence next year, please rest assured that I will cherish the ability to seek reinstatement to law practice after a suspension and will conduct myself with the highest degree of honesty and professionalism. Thank you again for your attention and consideration of imposing a sanction that reflects my genuine anguish over the events my conduct caused and who I am today. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel for the fine presentations. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess for the day.